Good afternoon. Good afternoon. This is Pastor Jonathan Mason, Philly's Favor 100.7 FM. And I want to welcome you in to the pastor's office. Listen, it's about 2 o'clock here on Sunday, and I just finished preaching. And as I always do every week, let me just give you a little recap of what we talked about today. I came from the book of James, the first chapter, the 19th and 20th verses, where it says, be quick, swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. Today, I focused on slow to speak, and the title of my message was Watch Your Mouth. Sometimes we hurt people with the words that we say. And always remember this, when you put it out there, you've lost control of it. You can never pull it back again. So please, please learn how to watch your mouth. Listen more than you speak, and you will be blessed. Now, I hope that I do not contradict what I preached today, because today we are going to be talking to one of the legendary journalists of our time. You know him throughout the decades, throughout the years. I had the opportunity to work with him at WABC Radio in New York, where he did middays for us and had a wonderful program with my friend Marty Berman. And today I'm just so proud to have him on our show. But it's going to be a no-holds-barred conversation. I want to welcome to the Philly's Favor 100.7 airwaves, Geraldo Rivera. Geraldo, how are you?
Pastor Mason, I am delighted to be speaking with you. You're an honored former colleague. You are just so adroit and so skilled at running those stations, and you were so good to everyone. And everyone admired you and respected you, and I was delighted to hear that you were in the radio business. And you know, as you preach the gospel, you're a good man, all around Renaissance man, Jonathan. I'm pleased to be speaking with you.
Well, I thank you for joining us today. I thank you for being on our airwaves, and I thank you for all that you've done for me throughout my career, having me on your show to talk about my camp. And I'm setting this up, Geraldo, because I want people to know that there is a relationship that goes back several years. But I got to tell you something, and I just want to jump right into it. What in the world is going on? I've had the opportunity to spend time with you. I've had the opportunity to spend time with you and your lovely wife, Erica. You've got, you're a family man. You're a logical thinker. You're one of the great voices of our time. Yet, can I say yet? Yet you are a supporter of this current administration, of number 45, of Donald Trump. And I just don't understand it, man. I look up to you. What are you doing?
Sometimes I don't understand it, Father Mason, tell you the truth. We spoke earlier of our friendship and our relationship that goes beyond anything in the professional realm. It's a spiritual, personal kind of relationship. And, you know, I've known Donald Trump since 1976 when he was one of the guests at my engagement party. So I've known him all those years. What is it, 44 years now. And, you know, it's hard to divorce the friendship from the presidency. Now, I know that his policies are abhorrent to many of the people that I love, including my wife, who has a Biden for President sign on our front lawn right now. But I am torn because his policies are policies I object to, by and large, particularly in my personal case, immigration, is harshness in that area. But, you know, when you have someone I've known him so many times. I interviewed him 35 times. We've gone out together many, many times, had many conversations. He's listened to me face-to-face, urging him, for example, Jonathan, not to deport the DACA kids. I've tried to lobby him to pass a juvenile assault weapons ban. There are things I think that I can accomplish because I have his ear I would not accomplish if I was one of the gigantic chorus, including yourself, Father Mason, who really opposes everything the man stands for.
But Geraldo, and I'll come from a spiritual perspective here. When I talk to sometimes to families about a loved one who you know, has gone astray. You know, one of the things that I share with them is that we must always love that person. We must always have compassion for that person. But sometimes you just got to let that person hit rock bottom before they realize exactly the error of their ways. Sometimes you got to just let them go and let God deal with them. This is a man who couldn't even find anything nice to say about Elijah Cummings. He couldn't find anything when Elijah passed. He couldn't find anything nice to say about John Lewis, somebody who's universally loved across the world. I don't know, Geraldo. I think sometimes we just got to let God handle him. Now, I do believe God can change him, but we can't, Geraldo. We just can't.
I totally understand everything that you said, and it's logical, it's passionate, and it's right. You know, with regards to Congressman Cummings and Congressman Lewis, you know, they never said anything good about him either. I'm just saying that. I'm putting that out there. Of course, they are revered. Everything that they've achieved during their lifetimes is sacred and undeniable. He's a petty, thin-skinned person. He's very tempestuous. He has, you know, many attributes like pride and haughtiness that I understand are repugnant to many people. But I also, because I know him so well, know that he is, for instance, let me just give you what happened before the plague hit, before the epidemic, because I think that changed everything, starting, you know, the middle of February on. I think it changed everything for everyone in this country. But up until that time, he had built an economy or he had built on what President Obama and Vice President Biden had built and propelled the unemployment rates to the lowest level ever among the African-American community, the lowest level ever among the Latino community, among women, among Asian-Americans. You know, sometimes, and I believe in the capitalist system. I believe in free enterprise. And if you believe in that the engine of American enterprise can lift all boats, I think that he has uniquely tapped into that. That's civil rights. When you give someone a well-paying job and a promise of promotion and job security and health insurance, that's civil rights. I think that he did it in a different way. It doesn't forgive his thin-skinned, you know, lack of graciousness, because he does, and you know, you can imagine how I feel watching him not attend, particularly Congressman John Lewis's, you know, lying in state in the Capitol Rotunda. He should have been there as President of the United States, but he was mad at Congressman Lewis. He was mad at Congressman Cummings. He was, he treasures loyalty, almost like a mafia don.
Geraldo, the president is supposed to be the conscience of the nation. You know,
He doesn't see it that way.
I think back to Barack Obama. I think back to Bill Clinton. I think back to George Bush, even. Let's focus on a Republican president. When those towers went down, he spoke for the nation. He was the conscience of our nation. He inspired us that we can get back up again. All this guy does is divide. You talk about what he did with the economy and civil rights. I'll tell you what's not civil rights. When he says that there are good people on both sides after what happened in Virginia. When he says that he has no position on the Confederate flag. Come on. We've got to take a stand. And here's my real concern. Donald Trump has proven that democracy is nothing more than an experiment. And it only takes one or two people to push the boundaries of democracy for the whole foundation to crumble. We've got to be able to say, men of conscience, and I know you are one, man, what you're doing is not right. You've got his ear.
Well, you know, I try my best. And I think that I have a unique access that I use for the greater good. I never use it for personal gain. What I try to do is to steer him in the direction of compassion and inclusion, particularly inclusion. I think that I played some small part in the criminal justice reform, in the economic opportunity zones. You know, there are ways you can tweak. You know, even someone as hard-headed and conservative as Trump, in the right direction. I really do believe I could have walked away a million times from him. You know, I think about it on an almost daily basis, watching the Democratic convention for 4 days last week and watching what people were saying. You know, I wanted to pick up the phone and say, you know, I renounce you. I walk away from you. I just feel that if all people of good conscience do that and leave him to his worst instincts, I think it'll be awful. You know, I want everyone to be on the same page in the sense that I want the most for everyone. I want, like, the neighborhood I live in the Cleveland suburbs now, Shaker Heights. When I was born, you couldn't be a Hispanic in this neighborhood. You couldn't be a black man in this, a black family in this neighborhood. You couldn't be a Jew in this neighborhood. There were all these exclusion clauses and all the rest of it. Now it's a wonderfully integrated neighborhood. You have a public school that functions, that's really, truly integrated public school function. I believe in pragmatic idealism. Let me try to make the best of this situation. I didn't vote for him. My wife wouldn't let me vote for him. She sent my daughter in the polling place on the Upper East Side with me to make sure that I voted for Hillary Clinton. I won't vote for him this time either. But there's things about the Democrats that really irk me and make me worry that, you know, when I see what happened or what's happening now in terms of urban violence, there was not a word about urban violence in the whole 4 days of the Democratic convention. How can that be when the number one cause of death among young black men is homicide? How can that not be an issue? And I don't think that the Democrats are institutionally capable of facing the grim reality of what life is really like, because so many of them are Hollywood elite and, idealists, as long as they don't get their own hands dirty. I think that there's justice and righteousness in trying your best to include people in a rising tide. I think it's so easy to walk away. So easy to say, I can't believe I have anything to do with this guy. I could have done it a million times, like I said, Jonathan. But I'm trying my best to make the best of this situation, because I think, he could be president for another 4 years. It's possible.
God help us all.
You see, but it's possible. And better that he listens to someone like me than someone like Steve Bannon.
Well, Bannon just got arrested along with about nine other close allies of this president. I've got to imagine what we'd be saying and what political pundits would be saying if 9 to 10 Obama allies were put in jail, as with this president. But for some reason, he gets a pass.
Well, it's Steve Bannon's a crook, and an opportunist. Let him go down. Michael Cohen is, I think, the one that will, if anyone can bring down President Trump, it'll be his former attorney, Michael Cohen, who, as you know, just wrote that book. You should get him on your show. He'll be an interesting interview. Rather than someone like me, I'm looking at my wife now, who just detests President Trump. She can't even look at him. She cries when she sees Kamala Harris, Senator Harris, accepting the nomination. My wife was sobbing, for the beauty of it. So was I, deeply touched, deeply affected. I'm still that person. I will always be that person. In growing up with Trump, basically, we were in our 20s. He was just in from the borough of Queens. I was, a brand new local newsman on the streets of New York. We kind of grew up together, in a sense. And it's very hard, just from an access point of view. I'd never had, not a best friend. He's certainly not my best friend, but I never had a friend, a hangout buddy, who was in the Oval Office. President Obama was, he hung out with a crowd that was, cut above me. He was with all the swells from the Ivy League. He didn't spend much time with me. Trump picked up the phone the first thing when he got elected and gave me a call. And it's hard to walk away. And the president of the United States says, "Hey, what do you think of, an assault weapons ban? What do you think of the Dreamers? What do you think of the wall on the southern border? What do you think of this or that or the other thing?" It's hard not to answer. I know a lot of people have rejected him. I know a lot of people have walked away from him, but I say again, it would be the easy thing for me to do, and I'm not ready to do it yet. When I end my career, and I'm getting close to it now, you know, Father Mason, I'm in my 50th anniversary in broadcasting, will be Labor Day, just a couple weeks from now.
Congratulations.
You know, thank you, sir. When I walk away from that, I'll look back, and it may very well be that I'll look back with deep regret. It may very well be that I'll look back and say, what the hell was I thinking about? I totally understand that. It may well be, you know, I'm half Catholic, so maybe I'll go to confession and say, dear Lord, forgive me for my naivete, my ego, my arrogance and sticking with this man with all his flaws. It may well be. On the other hand, it may be that, he turns out to be an okay president and helps bring people together. I know it's a long shot. I understand how people feel about him. You've heard me, my sincere, telling to you of what's going on. And that's where I'm at. And it's, in some ways, I'm trapped there. In other ways, it's an opportunity that it's hard to walk away from. It's hard to walk away when you may influence policy that affects, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of people. If I can get him, for instance, to be more lenient in terms of immigration reform, more energetic in terms of, criminal justice reform, then, you know, there's small achievements in funny places sometimes, Father Mason.
Let me jump in, and I promised you I wouldn't hold you long today, but I just want to jump into a couple of aspects of what some of you call his successes. You talked about the fact that the economy was at the lowest rate of all time. Now, Geraldo, I took over...
Lowest unemployment.
Yeah, lowest unemployment, I'm sorry. I took over the pastorate of this church. My father pastored this church for 41 years. He had developed relationships. He had put processes in place. When he was on his deathbed, he looked at me, he reached up his hand, he grabbed me, he said, "Look, don't mess it up." And I believe that Trump didn't inherit what Obama and Biden inherited. Trump inherited an economy that was on a trajectory of growth. Jobs were growing. Unemployment was low. The bottom line was all he had to do was come in the White House and not mess it up. And the sad part about it is he does not give them any credit for what they accomplished. So I'm curious, you know, what are the great successes of this administration that he can stand on to run for re-election?
Well, there were 100,000 troops in Afghanistan during President Obama's administration. Now there will soon be less than 4,000. We have only a handful in Iraq. We've defeated ISIS. We control the oil in the Kurdish regions. There are some successes. You got to be fair to the guy. I thought that President Obama, for all his elegance, for all his class, and when Michelle Obama came here, my wife and Erica and my sister Irene went to be with the First Lady. They were so honored to take their photograph with her. They were so excited, you know, with that kind of person. But when you heard both President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama during the Democratic Convention, they were not, gentle.
They told the truth.
President Trump at all.
They told the truth.
I mean, they told the truth as they see it. I have no doubt about that. But, you know, it broke with a long, generations-long tradition where, past presidents don't criticize sitting presidents, and particularly in those harsh terms. That certainly was not uniting the country. That was a call for, more division in my opinion.
But, Geraldo,
I didn't like that.
But is this the time to be silent? I'll give you an example. I sent a piece of mail from New Jersey to Columbia, Maryland on the 10th of August. Today is the 23rd of August. It still has not arrived. What's going on with the Postal Service is real. What's going on with the fact that he has appointed 200 conservative federal judges, the fact that he has the opportunity, and if he has four more years, to appoint at least two more Supreme Court judges that could totally reverse the gains that we've had relative to civil rights, voting rights, abortion, etc. Is this the time to be quiet, or is this the time to step up and say, yo, America, what are you doing?
Well, you know, you could take abortion as an issue. I personally believe in a woman's right to choose. But I also, working at Fox News for 20 years now and being around conservatives, I understand the deep sincerity of people who oppose abortion. You know, I understand how many, many, you know, millions of people see, you know, and that's not me. I believe in a woman's right to choose. I believe in Roe versus Wade. But I also understand that there's another side to that story. And I think a lot about this election will come down to that one issue, whether you believe a woman has the right to control her own body or whether you believe that life is sanctified from the instant of creation, or where you come in. That's a, you know, if you're against abortion, then that's one of the reasons Trump has strength in the voting booth. That's not me. Like I said, I didn't vote for him. But it's an issue that really is very, very important. In terms of the post office, I remember when James Farley was FDR's, I mean, I don't remember personally. James Farley was the Postmaster General under Franklin Roosevelt. He was a highly politicized, he was a political operator. The Postmaster General is always a political operator, is always a big donor, is always someone on both sides, Republican and Democrat. It's a plum job Trump just followed in that tradition. The post office is, I don't know that the post office is any better or worse than it ever was. I sent an overnight mail to some people I support a family in Spanish Harlem. I sent an overnight letter. It cost me $26 to send it. I said that if I doubled it, I could have flown and hand delivered the check. I think the post office is a mess. I think that whole vote by mail, absentee ballot thing is a phony issue. I think that it all comes down, and the election will be decided. I mean, aside from the big issues, the structural issues like abortion, the election will be determined. If you think that Trump screwed up the response to the coronavirus, to COVID-19, then you vote against him. If you think that he did as well as he could have under the circumstances, then you vote for him.
Well, what do you think?
Referendum.
What do you think?
Well, I think that you mentioned the timing in terms of the president, President Trump taking advantage of President Obama's great economic trajectory. What if you were Trump right now and you're looking at the calendar and you know that there's going to be 30 vaccines in December or January or February for this damned virus, and it's going to be too late for the election. You're going to lose the election, then you're going to watch Biden take over, Biden-Harris take over, and then the vaccines come down the pike, and now it's January, they're inaugurated in their administration. It's timing is everything in life. I think that, in fairness, he has not been a bad president. I deplore the divisive stuff. I try to speak out against it as much as I can. I tell him, I can't tell you how many times, Jonathan, I've told him, you got to make this place look more like the White House. Make this place look more like America.
It does look like the White House. It's all white. Listen, if we want to call Ben Carson, okay, I get that.
Ben Carson's a good man. He's a good man.
I got you. I got a couple minutes. Listen, I hear what you're saying. What's the cost analysis? Let's say I agree with you that he's a good president. I don't, but let's say some people that are listening agree that he was a good president up until this virus. And I wish I had more time to dig into that. But let's say that the cost that we're paying with the racial divide in this country that has been flamed by Trump and his minions Is it worth that expense? Is it worth the expense of Rashard Brooks, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and all of these young people who the police have gunned down that were unarmed? I walked out of my... I don't know if it's worth the expense. It's not worth the expense, Geraldo.
Well, I think that, you know, you strike a chord that resonates with me. But you have to remember Trayvon Martin and Michael Brown and
Eric Garner.
So many Eric Garner, Staten Island, so many others were during the Obama administration. I think that we Charleston, the church massacre. You know, the man in the Oval Office can only do so much. There's hatred and racism that's deeply ingrained in this country. You work against it. You preach against it. I've known you for years. You're a good-hearted person. You're spreading the word to be kind, to be compassionate. But we've got real problems. We've got real fundamental problems that, you know, singing Kumbaya is not going to fix. You know, here in Cleveland and East Cleveland, the federal government is here. This is one of the cities targeted in Operation Legend because of the murder rate is out of control. It's out of control. Children, Tamir Rice, the 12-year-old shot by the cops here during the Obama administration, is a horrible thing that happened. The police were guilty of quick triggers. You know, they looked at a child and saw a man, and a tragedy resulted. But I can't tell you how many murders there have been, young black men killing other young black men since Tamir Rice was killed by the cops.
Geraldo.
Scores of them.
Geraldo.
Scores of them.
Geraldo. Geraldo. I love you. And I want to preface it by saying that you're ignoring the fact that our society, I'm 47 years old. I'm 48 in October. I've lived through Carter, I've lived through Reagan, I've lived through Bush, I've lived through Clinton, I've lived through another Bush, an Obama, and now a Trump. I have never seen the racial divide in our country as acute and as overt as it is right now. You've got to agree that the dog whistles that he blows, the dog whistles that the overt races in his administration blow, it has brought to the fore and made it comfortable for these races to rear their head. And that's why we have issues like Virginia Tech. That's why we have issues, like Charlottesville. That's why we have these issues that are now right in front of our faces. They were there all the time. They're just not quiet anymore. They've got covering from Trump.
I agree with you. And I just want to know what do we do about it? How do we fix it? Regardless of who wins, you have a fundamental divide in this country. The Republican Party is the white people's party. The Democratic Party is the people of color party. It's a stark reality that I don't like, and I think is very unhealthy. When I was growing up, I'm much older than you, obviously. I'm 77. When I was growing up, years and years ago, in the 1950s, it was better in some ways then than it's become now. Now it's awful, and there's this tension that I think is too bad. I just wish that the way you phrased your question and challenge to me, you should have spoken at the Democratic convention, Jonathan. I think that that's a message of strength and healing that we need much more of. You know, I know, because he wants to be liked, that Trump would love more black support, more Latino support. And when you go around the Trump building, when I knew him, you know, I was on Celebrity Apprentice last season. I was on the last season. I mean, how's that for timing? I was on Celebrity Apprentice in March of 2015. He announced in June of 2015. I was so proud that he was announcing my friend. And then the first thing out of his mouth is that Mexican immigrants are racists
right.
and murderers.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I was on the phone and I said, come on, you get it. What is this? But I was going to say that in the Trump building, there's black women, Latinas, Latinos. It looks like the United Nations in there. He doesn't hire. He's not a racist, but I definitely think that he plays. I think all these politicians play the race card, and I deplore it. That's why I'm not a politician. I think that it's awful. I wish it was more integration. I wish that his cabinet was much more, a reflection of what the country looks like than it is now. But going back to the dilemma you posed right at the beginning of this conversation, Jonathan, why do I stick with him? I don't know, and I assess that and reassess that as they said on a daily basis.
Well, listen, I'm a man that believes in redemption. I'm a man that believes in prayer. I also believe that God can change Trump, and I believe that there is the possibility of redemption for this man. But right now I'm talking to you, and I want you to know that I want to thank you for being here today, but I'm going to pray for you. And the reason I'm saying that, the reason I'm saying that is because you have a voice that reaches millions, and it is an imperative that we, that we talk to this country and let them know that democracy is an experiment and that we've got to preserve democracy. And when men of good faith and good conscience don't stand up against people who have shown that they will push the boundaries of democracy, guess what? Democracy can crumble. Guess what? If they would have stopped Hitler, there may not have been a Holocaust, but people stood silently by and said, well, I know the guy for a long time. He's not that bad. And so I'm just sharing with you that we've got to take a stand. November, we've got to vote this man out. We've got to vote his administration out. We'll agree to disagree. But I want you to know that I appreciate you coming into the pastor's office today. I appreciate you being vulnerable and sharing exactly why you stand where you stand. But even more than that, I appreciate the goodwill and the friendship that you have directed towards me over the years. I want to thank you for being here. I want to wish you all of God's best. Tell Erica we love her, and thank you for her support of Biden Harris. And we know that you can change still, too. All right?
Okay. I love it. Thank you so much, Pastor.
All right.
I appreciate the conversation.
Geraldo Rivera, everybody, on Philly's Favor, 100.7 FM, and we certainly thank him for joining us this afternoon. Phew, I got to catch my breath. I sure do appreciate Geraldo coming in the pastor's office this Sunday. It's never easy being in the pastor's office when there are issues on the table. But I just feel that I had to share with him, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. And we've got to stand up and make sure that on November 3rd, a change comes to America. Well, I want to change pace right now here in the pastor's office. History was made this past Wednesday when Kamala Harris became the vice presidential nominee for the Democratic Party, the first woman of color, first black woman to become the vice presidential nominee. And I was excited. I was ecstatic. But then I got even more excited when she gave a shout out to Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority and to the Divine Nine. She also gave a shout out to historically black colleges and universities. She didn't forget where she came from. And to that end, I've got a great guest coming on now. I met this young lady in 2016 when I had the opportunity to be on her campus for a homecoming celebration and monument dedication. I was blown away by her leadership, blown away by her humility, blown away by just how she was adored by those that were a part of the events that I attended. I'm so excited to have her here. She has distinguished herself as one of the great academic leaders of our time, but she also is the president of one of the historic organizations in American history. I want to introduce to my Philly's Favor audience, to those of you that have come in the pastor's office with us today, I want to introduce to you the president of Tennessee State University and the international president of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated, Dr. Glenda Glover. Dr. Glover, welcome to the pastor's office. Ma'am, how are you doing?
Oh, thank you so much. I'm doing great, Brother Mason. It's always so good to speak with you, to hear you, and just to hear your wisdom. I can just sit there and listen to you talk for hours.
Well, I appreciate that. I wish my congregation felt the same way. Can you come one Sunday and encourage them?
I'd rather do that.
Listen, I have to say this publicly. I think I've said it to you privately, but I want those listening on the airwaves to hear this. When I was international president of Phi Beta Sigma, I came to Tennessee State for the dedication of a monument, and that dedication actually took place during TSU's homecoming. Now, I went to Norfolk State University, and I'm not going to lie to you, I'm Norfolk State Spartan up and down, but I've got to tell you that I have never been to a homecoming like TSU's homecoming. The parade through the city, the enthusiasm of the crowd. Now, I will tell you this. I've been back to Norfolk State for some homecomings. I've enjoyed it. I've also been a part of some homecomings that are the bane of my very existence. But what is it about a TSU homecoming that just brings out the best in not only the alum, but the city itself?
It's a homecoming like no other. People come from all around the world to be at Tennessee State Homecoming. It is the parade. We have the walk over to the monuments. You know, I'll do a shameless plug here, but I think we were the only HBCU that has a setup like that. We have Greek Row, and every Greek organization has a monument on the campus in the order of founding. There's Africa first and Africa, Africa second. It goes down like that. It is just phenomenal. When you are dedicated, it was just so phenomenal. You could just feel the electricity because it was like you were in a church service.
Oh, my goodness.
You did the dedication.
Yes.
I thought you would just say, come you that love the Lord and open up the door to the church, but you didn't.
Listen, wherever I go, I'm always trying to win souls, but I again want to thank you. You are so gracious and so hospitable, and so I just again want to thank you for that. It was just a pleasure to be in your presence and a pleasure to be on your campus. So, again, I say thank you.
Thank you. I had a great time. That was wonderful.
So now, how serendipitous. August the 19th. The 19th day of the 8th month of the year, and Senator Kamala Harris gives her acceptance speech and talks or gives a shout out to her sorority, Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority. I want you to talk to me from two perspectives. One, how did you feel as a black woman seeing the first black woman nominated as vice president of the United States? I want to hear about that, but on another level, as the president, the international president of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated, how'd you feel?
It was a feeling that is difficult to describe. It's so wonderful. It was so exciting. It started Tuesday night when they named her, last week. It was just been wonderful. It's a great moment for African American women, for women in general. It's a great moment for our country to see Senator Harris accept that nomination to be the number two person on that ticket. And we have to commend Vice President Joe Biden for his insight to bring someone of Senator Harris' stature to the ticket. She's charismatic. She's so intelligent and experienced. Above all, she's qualified for the job. It was electrifying. She was so in control. It was just a proud moment. It was a moment of just absolute and sheer pride for, I think, the country as a whole to see how far we've come. And an older person said to me earlier this morning, today, she said, you know, when I saw her walk to that, was stand on that podium and accept that nomination, she said, my eyes filled with water because it says to me the civil rights movement was not in vain.
Absolutely.
It said all those marches and demonstrations were not in vain. And so I said, sister, I agree with you. And so that's the feeling. You've gotten to number two slot. It's not in vain. Our votes have not been in vain.
That's right. You know what? I've got to share with you that last night as I was watching with my son, and just the level of enthusiasm that my 13-year-old son had watching this and seeing her give the speech. First of all, he was on a high after Barack Obama spoke. But then to see her and to see it become reality, I've just got to believe that young black boys and girls all across this country now have it embedded in their mind that they can be and do what it is that they want to do by God's grace. So it was exciting. But here's the thing that's go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Here's the thing that's interesting to me, though. There are still a number of people out there that are asking themselves, well, what is the Divine Nine? I heard her say the Divine Nine. What is Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority? Can you do me a favor? Can you generally talk about the Divine Nine and specifically talk about Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority for those that may not have had that experience?
Of course. There are nine black Greek letter organizations on the college campuses and then after college. Alpha Kappa Alpha, Delta Sigma Theta, Zeta Phi Beta, and Sigma Gamma Rho sororities. In the fraternities, we have Alpha Phi Alpha, Kappa Alpha Psi, Omega Psi Phi, Phi Beta Sigma, we have Iota. So you have five fraternities and four sororities. And we have similar missions. We engage in similar causes. I always wear fight. So we do, we fight for similar causes, and we combine together on many, many, many issues. So we have a council of presidents of each organization, the president of each organization, form the council of presidents. So we meet regularly. We're meeting next week and go over key issues, health care. The police brutality. We're taking a stand on the post office. So the voter suppression. So, and that's why we call it the Divine Nine. Someone gave us a name, and we accepted it. it's a Greek letter organization, and I think she was wise to include them because it's bigger than Alpha Kappa Alpha. We're proud and honored that she's a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha. But when it's going to take everybody to get her elected, it's going to take all of the sororities, all the fraternities, the links, the 100 black women, National Council of Negro Women, the Masons, it's going to take all of them. Mason, me and your family too, Masons.
That's right.
It's going to take them all to get her elected because you know the voter suppression that's going on now, the voter intimidation, the fear factor that's coming out there now and all the new rules and regulations. So I don't expect it to be easy. We expect it to be a bitter fight, but you know what? Victory is sweeter when the fight is bitter.
Come on. And last week I was talking to Ed Gordon on my show, and I shared with him that I had a college coach that said, even if you're up by 20 points, operate like you're down by 50. And that's the mentality that we've got to have right now, is that we're down by 50 and we've got to make it to the polls by hook or by crook to make sure that we make a change in this country come November the 3rd. I remember when I was president of the fraternity and President Obama and Biden were in office, they made it a habit of having representatives of the Divine Nine at the White House. I think I counted eight times that I was there when I was president. And I remember going to President Obama's final Christmas party. And I was talking to Mark Morial, and he said, you know what, Brother Mason? I said, what's that? He said, this here is the Last Supper. I believe that since Trump has been in office, we've probably not been invited back. But I'm telling you, I believe there's a day coming, President Glover, where the Divine Nine, and not just the Divine Nine, but all of the black organizations will have a partner in the White House again, and I'm just so glad. I'm so glad to see Senator Harris as a part of that.
I am so happy to see that too, because I got to say one other thing. We cannot, as a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha, the Divine Nine, we cannot endorse candidates, but we can We can, in our individual capacities, work at the polls or who we choose and exercise our amendment rights, but we can't, we're tax exempt. But I always take it up front. But having said that, it's going to be a good day because I can personally support who I choose.
That's right.
It's going to be a great day. Remember, you were talking about the great day, but I believe in 1 Corinthians 2:9.
Come on.
The eye has not seen nor ear heard.
Yes, Lord. Yes, Lord.
A good thing is coming.
Listen.
I mean, he's not even entered to the heart of man. Man, we don't even know how great it's going to be.
Listen, I told you when we got on the phone today, don't you start preaching. I'm going to take up an offering. And I will send it straight to...
Well, Peter's in my family, so I might take a scripture
any day. Amen. Listen, on a serious note, I do have to ask you. None of us ever thought that we would live through a pandemic. It's happened in third world countries, but since 1918, it hasn't happened here. You know, my question to you, because your Boulé was scheduled to be in Philadelphia. Here in 2020, and you had to make changes because of the pandemic. But not only did Alpha Kappa Alpha have to make changes in other organizations, but the lives of people have changed. One of the things we do here is we give out food to 500 people every week, 30-pound boxes of food. And some of the cars that I see in that line, I mention it every week to my congregation, are cars you probably would have never expected to see in line getting a food. Not only have people's financial status changed, the health status has changed. They've lost loved ones. You know, in a time such as this, what have you done to mobilize Alpha Kappa Alpha to help those that are hurting? How are we making a difference in the community right now?
Well, we have a sister relations committee, and then we have a pandemic task force committee. Mm-hmm. And we just do so many things in the community anyway, prior to COVID. But since COVID, we operationalize our international program committee so we can make sure we get food to people in need. We have a team that goes out and just helps. And so chapters is at the chapter level. For example, one chapter in Washington, D.C. is Zion Maker. Chapter of Alpha Kappa Alpha. We have a book drop outside of the sorority house, and anybody can come by and pick up a book, and you can just read the books. Well, since this pandemic hit, we just put food there. And then they package it up, and then just come by, and we just put food there. Students, others just come by and get the food. So we still try to be community-oriented because our program, we are a service organization, a service sorority. And just because the pandemic is here, we can't stop serving others.
That's right.
You know, you can't stop serving because things happen. You know, God expects you to be a servant. We expect you to serve. And so that being the case, you find ways to get it done. We have, we work in partnership with Oprah Winfrey, who's a TSU graduate, and she gave us $2 million. Just give Kroger gift cards, food cards, $200 food cards to the families in the community. It was phenomenal. So we seek ways that we can help, we can serve, because that's what we do, we serve.
Nice. That's beautiful. And I think that's one of the main things I want those of our listeners who don't understand or haven't been a part of the Divine Nine experience to understand is that our organizations, they move past college. We are members for life. We will never say we used to be a member.
I met a young lady, and she said, I was a member. When I was an undergraduate, I was a member, and she gave the name of the words I won't give. And she said, I said, well, you know, it's not like that in the African-American sorority.
That's right.
Because you take that oath for life.
That's
you're
right.
Going to serve. You know, you want to have active membership, and you want to serve your community and just serve. You know, people, you know, I love serving others. You know, there was the song, the more you give, the more... The more you give, the more you get.
The more he gives to you. Just keep on giving because it's really true. I sing with you, Dr. Glover.
Here it comes. Let me get my shouting shoes on.
Come on. Listen, let me ask you this. Step into your position as president of TSU. We've seen that University of North Carolina started classes and then shut down. We've seen that Notre Dame started classes and shut down because cases rose on their campus. What's the TSU plan going forward for this semester?
Our classes started this week. And the first 2 weeks have to be online, and they're in a, it's called safer in place policy, where they can't, their move they're quite restricted. We're just trying to make sure that they don't, the spread, there's no spread. Well, first we want to identify any type of infection, not especially COVID, but we don't want to have any type of infection on campus, so we don't want to spread. So stay safely in place where you can't leave the residence halls without, I mean, there's some severe restrictions. And then online, the first 2 weeks online, after the first 2 weeks, we have to evaluate again to see if we go part of it in person, part online. We've given the students the option to take classes online or in person, and we gave the faculty the same option. So we have about 25% that say they want to be in person. Well, that helped us out a lot because now the class is a lot smaller. Instead of having 30 students in English class, we may have 15 or even 10, and then you can put in all the social distancing and put tape down chairs, which you wouldn't remove all the chairs out with the tape over. You can't sit here. So we had to equal distance, social distance the chairs, put the plexiglass up. So we've gone through a lot of preparations all summer long for this. And so we are very appreciative of the CARES Act funding, the Stimulus Act that was signed into law earlier this year, because it helped us to prepare for this financially. Because HBCUs were struggling. We didn't have extra money for this.
Absolutely.
But the CARES Act came in, it helped a lot. I owe a special bit of gratitude to the Congressional Black Caucus and to, I mean, Marsha Fudge. I mean, we just love her. Alma Adams, we love her. Kamala Harris. I mean, there are so many people who fought their battle for us to get the funding. We just so appreciative of them because they don't just sign into law. So we just love it. So that helped us a lot, but it wasn't enough. And certainly it wasn't nearly enough, but it was better not having it all, put it like that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, listen, I told your team I wouldn't keep you long because I know you have a busy schedule. And again, I can't thank you enough for joining us here today in the pastor's office. You know why I named it the pastor's office? Because as I grew up in the church, if the deacons started acting like they wanted to run the church, they were brought into the pastor's office. If somebody needed counsel, they were brought into the pastor's office. It seemed like all decisions were made in the pastor's office, and we want this conversation that we have weekly to be a conversation of solutions, of good decisions to help us move forward. And that being said, I want to ask you in my final question, what charge would you give to the Divine Nine? What charge would you give to our community as a whole as we move towards November 3rd? This is not a time for us to sit down. It's a time for us to get up. But I want them to hear from the president of TSU, the president of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority. What should we be doing right now to get prepared for November? And then what do we need to do on Election Day?
Well, here's the voter engagement, voter mobilization, voter education, voter registration. Vote. Vote, vote, vote. Vote early. The polls mean nothing if you don't go out and vote. So we say work at the polls. We poll workers, call others. Make sure your friends vote, your family vote. It's not enough to say I voted and have a little pin on your lapel to say you voted. You have to vote and make sure others vote. Because this election, it is a very consequential election. It will determine a lot for our future. It will determine whether or not the Supreme Court goes all the way, well, it will determine the direction of the Supreme Court. That's probably the most important. I'm not sure if anything is more important right now in government than the Supreme Court and with the decision that's going to have to come up right now. So you just must vote. And then I tell people, they say, how do you run two organizations? How do you manage that? And I give this advice to everybody. You must get up early in the morning and listen to your God voice. Hmm. You cannot start a day without prayer and just meditation. I tell people, I can't run just TSU by itself, especially another organization, with Alpha Kappa Alpha, unless there's I get up and start with prayer. So we've got to pray our way through these polls to know from now to November. We got to stay in prayer. We got to work hard. Voter education, the importance of this election. We can't let this harvest pass. So let's make sure we tell everybody that they must go out and vote. You know, vote like you've never voted before. Vote like your life depends on it, because it might. So vote. That's my final words.
And let the church say amen. Dr. Glover, I want to thank you for being a part of our program today. I want to thank you for just being you and the work that you continue to do, not just at TSU, but internationally with Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority. I remember speaking at your Boulay in Charlotte, and I shared with them, I'm suffering from a little bit of Alpha Kappa Alpha PTSD, but I just wasn't good enough. I just wasn't good enough, and I understand. But I hope I've improved my game a little bit at my old age.
Alpha Kappa Alpha women love 5 days
sick.
You know that anyway.
Let the church say amen. Dr. Glover.
Get on the air.
That's right. That's right. Dr. Glover, thank you so much for being with us, and I can't wait to be in your presence again. Looking forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you. Thank you a lot. Bye-bye.
God bless. And I want to say God bless you to each and every one of you that joined me in the pastor's office on this Sunday. I pray that you were informed. I pray that you might have even been entertained. I pray that you took something away from these conversations with Geraldo Rivera and President Glenda Glover. Listen, Nahum, the first chapter in the 7th verse says, "The Lord is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble, and he knoweth them that trust in him." Let me share with you that you're going to face trouble. You're going to face trials. You're going to face tribulations. But as long as you know where your strength comes from, as long as you know that God is still sitting on the throne, everything is going to be all right. Stay prayerful, stay careful, and keep the faith. This is Pastor Jonathan Mason signing off. We'll see you next week in the pastor's office.